All right, this is the Magical Hour. We'll take your phone calls with Dr. Jerome Corsi, Killing the Deep State, his latest book, a New York Times bestseller. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Dr. Jerome Corsi, Killing the Deep State. Jerry, it's a divided nation. Hillary beat Donald Trump with the popular vote, so it's close to a 50-50 split there. What is it that the president has done or has not done that has ticked off the deep state so much that they want him out of office?
Well, I think the basic proposition of Donald Trump is to go to America First, which is a return to nation-state patriotism, a reinforcement of the Constitution and fundamental freedoms we have as Americans. Now, this is directly against many of the propositions of the deep state, open borders, allowing everybody's a citizen, let everybody vote, illegal as immigrants as well as citizens. Many of the propositions of Hillary's campaign on identity politics, this very much of a left-leaning view and increasingly hard left-leaning view of the world with Tom Perez, who is a La Raza attorney, and Keith Ellison, who is a black nationalist. And both of them have this in their backgrounds. These are the heads of the Democratic National Party today. It's a very different party than Jack Kennedy or Hubert Humphrey would have recognized as the Democratic Party. And so losing this, 8 years of Obama and then maybe 8 years of Hillary, I think these globalists felt like they could finally put in place the last elements needed of this New World Order vision, which would have been a revision of the First Amendment. The hard left is very intolerant of any divergent ideological positions being expressed. Restriction or elimination of the Second Amendment, a dramatic revision of the Fourth Amendment with intelligence agencies allowed to gain information. And we're increasingly finding through the social media, like Facebook, which is now in crisis, providing the front end to many of the intelligence agencies' gathering of data or the political parties' gathering of data on voters or the population. These views of heading in the direction of away from nation-state that Hillary envisioned in the New World Order was so opposed by Donald Trump's version of America, vision of America First, that I think Donald Trump became an enemy of the deep state almost from the beginning.
Interesting take. Now, do you think they would have favored any of the other Republican candidates outside of Donald Trump?
Almost any of the others. I think certain of them would have been very easily accepted. Certainly Jeb Bush would have been very easily accepted by the deep state. I think Marco Rubio would have been acceptable. Any number of them who are really the Republican establishment politicians in Washington are very close to the classical Democrats, more leftist, and certainly not part of the conservative Republican Party. Donald Trump really did not win as a Republican. He ran against a lot of the Republican Party. He won more as an independent.
He's really not a Republican in the first place, is he?
No, he's not. He's not really a Republican at all. He's a Republican by adoption. I mean, even if you remember in the very early stages of the campaign, there was an issue of whether he would support the candidate of the Republican Party. He had to sign a declaration that he would if he himself were not the candidate.
Would he have beaten Hillary if he ran as a Democrat and tried to get the nomination?
I think that would have been very hard because Hillary, as we now know from the WikiLeaks, pretty much had the Democratic nomination sewed up. She had the superdelegates, which really rigged the primary process in her favor. And Bernie Sanders came to find. Bernie Sanders was winning primaries and would come out of it with maybe even fewer delegates than Hillary wanted.
He's probably still shaking his head.
Well, I think he came to accept it, but his supporters never really did accept it. And that was one of the, I think, detriments to Hillary's campaign when the WikiLeaks exposed the extent to which the primaries had been rigged by Hillary and her supporters like Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Initially, it seemed that the president was going to have good relations with Russia. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. I went through the Cold War in the 60s. So did you, Jerry. And I don't want to do that again. But I feel as if right now, tensions with Russia are worse than they've ever been. What's going on?
Well, I read a chapter in the Killing of the Deep State where I make it clear that both Hillary and John Podesta were largely on the payroll of Russia. We're receiving a lot of money from Russia, including selling military technology to Russia during the reset, which was done, and the Uranium One decision, and even less the offshore entities through which both were paid, the bank accounts, the Russian oligarchs, the crime figures that were close to Putin who were paying Podesta and Hillary. I think the truth was that the Democrats were afraid that their close ties and, you know, financial ties to Russia were going to come out, and so they launched this attack that Trump was colluding with Russia to steal the WikiLeaks, steal the Podesta and DNC emails and give them to WikiLeaks. And I think the evidence of that is weak and non-existent.
Does President Trump get along with Vladimir Putin? Are they friends?
He will and he can. I mean, it's still remarkable to me to see the Democrats engaging in what I view to be a new age McCarthyism. You know, there was the Democrats who'd always supported Russia going back to the revolution. The Democrats were always leftist, seeing Russia as a new light. And in the 50s, when Senator McCarthy was saying there are communists in government and the State Department and the Army and Hollywood, etc., it was the Democrats and the left who basically argued for Russia. And that's all reversed now. Now, the Democrats attacking Russia and demonizing Russia, to me, is kind of a mind-startling reversal.
And you would think it would be healthy to become friends with what could appear to be your enemies.
I think in the future what we've got to do, and I think President Trump's beginning it, I think you're going to see North Korea give up its nuclear weapons. I'm very confident that's going to happen.
Well, Kim said today to the Chinese president that's what he was going to do.
Yes, he's going to do
that. We'll see that if he does it. I think we should try to become friends with Iran. What do you think?
I think that North Korea is the first and Iran will be the second. I think.
But the deep state doesn't want that.
Well, the deep state may not be in control of this. And the deep state, I think, was happy to have a third world war with nuclear weapons from North Korea and Iran, certainly.
You really think they wanted annihilation of U.S. cities, Jerry?
Oh, I think the deep state is happy to have a certain percentage of the population gone and across the world. I mean, the people in India, the people in Africa, these are people who are, you know, viewed with disdain because they're not, they're considered by the elite to be kind of useless. There's no fundamental religious orientation in the left, hard left any longer that views these people as intrinsically valuable because they're human beings, doesn't see their potential or their gifts that they were given by God that could contribute to a brighter future. Just says, you know, how many billions of people do we need, and it's too many. That's the kind of orientation, you know, the Malthusian orientation that is, I think, plagued the left for a long time.
Let's take some calls here, Jerry. We'll talk more. I want to talk about the Mueller investigation as well. We haven't really touched on that. Let's go to first-time caller Robert in Sun Valley, California. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Very well.
I have a question here. What role the psychiatry and the mental health industry may be playing in trying to assist the deep state in impeaching President Trump and disarming America? And the reason I raise this question is that psychiatrists have been calling for mental evaluation of President Trump, claiming he's unstable, mentally unfit. And also, regarding the school shootings, it's a well-known fact that the side effect of many of these antidepressant psych drugs cause violence, homicide, and suicide.
Sure.
And most of these school shootings are kids that are on these mind-altering drugs.
Okay, and are you saying that the president might be on some of these drugs?
No.
All right.
I'm asking what role the deep state may be using psychiatry to undermine President Trump and suggest he's mentally unfit.
All right.
And what role the deep state might be playing in the use of psychiatry to create this panic and homicide in public schools through mental health and through psychiatry, because the media doesn't cover that aspect of the side effects of these psych drugs.
Well, we do quite a bit, along with Dr. Peter Breggin, our resident psychiatrist, who is so opposed to drugs. One of his books, Medication Madness. Jerry, let's take the first one first. There are some out there that are trying to claim that the president is unstable. How does he fight back at that?
Well, I think it's a long stretch to be able to make that claim. The 25th Amendment's got certain requirements in it, which I think are unlikely to be fulfilled, including, the cabinet basically turning against the president. It was written to cover situations, the 25th Amendment, like when Woodrow Wilson had a stroke.
Incapacity.
And I think short of incapacity, it's going to be tough to argue mental instability simply because you don't like the policies of the president. To take this into consideration, what if conservatives who had opposed Barack Obama had argued that he was mentally unstable? I don't see any basis for that. You might disagree with his policies, but Barack Obama is a highly intelligent individual, and so is Donald Trump. And to say that they're mentally unstable, I don't think is sustainable.
And the thoughts that the deep state might be behind some of the school shootings and things because of manipulating psychiatry and these drugs, what do you think of that?
Well, I think there's a lot more evidence for this. I've contemplated that what the CIA did with their MKUltra program, which was a 1950s, 1960s program to use drugs, including LSD, with psychiatry to see if people could be programmed to be Manchurian candidates, assassins, and et cetera, controlled by the intelligence agencies. I think the intelligence agencies found that was very difficult to do reliably, to control people through drugs, but they found that if drugs were very effective in, overall controlling a person, and that I think the MKUltra program just went public. So now we're beginning to drug kids in schools in great numbers. The opioid crisis is there. I think, Aldous Huxley in Brave New World, who envisioned a drugged population as being controlled, was predicting what we're seeing today, especially if it was an intelligence agency manipulation to desire to get a dumbed down but subservient population that would go along with everything. And yes, the school shootings are typically disturbed adolescents who are more often than not on these very psychoactive drugs prescribed by psychiatrists that do have side effects that are both homicidal and suicidal, and they should not be being prescribed, and these kids can become very dangerous. I think we're going to find over time that this drugging of the population has got to stop.
Oh, I agree. We are way over-medicated.
Yes, way over-medicated, and beyond the necessity of being medicated. And, a pill does not solve all problems, and that's where the medical profession, the psychiatric profession, has found it easy to write out a prescription for a drug rather than solve the underlying behavioral problem that the person seeking psychiatric assistance wants solved.
Let's go to Utah. Tom's with us now. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Sure.
Jerome, I understand you talked to one of my students and associates today, Blake Tracy.
Yes.
On the psychiatric.
Yes, I did. She called this afternoon as It's been one of my longstanding efforts. She is one of the experts in the impact of these psychoactive drugs on adolescents, and she has a great deal of research. I've been trying to connect with her for a while because I've also, as George knows, I've written about this subject as well.
Yes.
And
She and I worked as tandem lecturers, or we traveled in tandem, and I hit the nutritional disparity factor that it contributes to the, quote, so-called chemical imbalance crap. But anyway,
she's going to send me research, and I'm looking forward to getting it.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, or we did talk with, or a friend of mine did speak with Tom, with, George, when he was in Portland, I think with, what's her name, Kathy Austin Fitz, but if, I don't know if you know.
Catherine Austin Fitz, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, George, I'm the whistleblower that, by the way, I am visually and even vocally impaired because
right.
of an assault.
I remember that.
But anyway, Jerome, I opened up a poisoning factor put in place by the deep state, as best as I can call it, to call out the poor. But in the process, they also utilize the same program to eliminate a lot of the people after Katrina in those FEMA trailers. And then I found out that the World Health Organization was going to utilize those FEMA trailers that I'd already condemned. I literally condemned those trailers in 2009. That's all on a website called LicenseToKill.us, by the way. You can see my congressional testimony. But in 2011, the winter, I found out that the World Health Organization was going to utilize those already condemned trailers from Mississippi and Louisiana. And I sat and testified to the directorship of the World Health Organization, and that stopped the transfer and the brokering of those units
Good
by the Clinton
you.
Foundation to the victims.
How many units were there, Tom?
And that was the Clinton Foundation operation, right?
Yes. I didn't know that at the time. I literally had spoken to Hillary twice in four trips to D.C. I spent 180 days total back there.
What did they want to use the trailers for, Tom?
Well, they were going to utilize those already condemned trailers that already killed people in Katrina because of their violation of code. They used Chinese-produced formaldehyde drenched is the best word I can to it, building materials, but they also violated the ventilation code.
Ah,
so even 3.5 years after the fact, these trailers were still producing, believe it or not, formaldehyde and carbon monoxide, and the people inside were breathing. In fact,
and dying. Well, good job for you for getting those things condemned. To be sure. Boy, the deep state seems to have their hands in everything, Jerry.
Well, it's a pervasive activity to control the population. And if we're the subject tonight, we'd also expand into Haiti, where similar crimes were committed. And we would go into the Clinton Foundation activities there. But
Jerry, let's come back and talk more about killing the deep state and wrap things up with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final phone calls here with Dr. Jerome Corsi, the book, Killing the Deep State. And Jerry, of course, let's tell people where they can get a hold of the book. I'm already getting emails from my friends in St. Louis claiming copy to your book, so I'm going to have to give it out tomorrow.
Thank you, George.
Do I have permission to sign your name to them?
Of course you do.
Okay, great.
the book, Killing the Deep State, is the subtitle, Fight to Save President Trump. It's available now. It should be in bookstores everywhere across the country. It's done extremely well in Amazon.com. It's reached number one in several categories. It's available on Amazon.com, of course, at BarnesandNoble.com, at BooksAMillion.com. Just search my name, Jerome Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, and it should be readily available.
I heard Newsmax on this program ran a commercial for this book, so how are they involved with you?
Newsmax is the publisher.
Ah, okay, good. Okay.
Humanix Books is a subsidiary of Newsmax, and Chris Ruddy, the book was Chris Ruddy's idea. He called me from China and suggested that I write this book. He had a an idea that this would be a great idea and that he wanted me to write the book.
Back in 1997, when I'm doing my Nighthawk show in St. Louis, I get a call from a guy named Christopher Ruddy who said, I'm putting together this website called Newsmax.com. Can I get on your show? So
right.
I put him on way back in 1997.
Well, I have worked with many in the industry, and I was with Joseph Farah for a long time at World Net Daily, and now with InfoWars with Alex Jones, and yet working with Chris Ruddy. So I've had experience with many across the industry, and all the people I mentioned, Alex, Joseph Farah, Chris Ruddy. I give a shout out to all of them. They're all outstanding and have been very important to me in my career.
You talk about the deep state wanting to take somebody down. They do not like Alex Jones, do they?
No, Alex Jones. But, you know, Alex Jones was described, I think, before I joined his company by one of my most respected investment bankers as having created the most disruptive media in the world to the mainstream media. And I think that's accurate, that Alex has really, you know, carved new ground in terms of an entire different approach to news than the mainstream media, which is increasingly state-controlled and I think continuing to parrot the CIA line. And disruptive media, I think, today is what Americans are looking for. That's why I think Alex has been so tremendously successful and popular.
I'm
honored to be with him.
He is. And he'll tell you, by the way, we helped make him when we started putting him on Coast to Coast.
I remember this is going back to maybe 2005, 2006, before I think I'd really started working with you, George. You and Alex were having a conversation one night. I was listening to it on the radio, talking about me. I'd come up with that's when I was working on the oil books, you know.
That's right. Atomic oil. Iran and stuff like
Atomic
that.
Atomic Iran. And, you know, you were asking Alex if he thought that I was going to be, you know, a contender. And you both agreed that I might have the chance to be, and I really appreciate that discussion.
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, I did one of my live stage shows in Toronto, and Alex was one of our guests, but we wanted to spoof the sold-out crowd, and we used a videotape of Alex that he did for us, and I announced to the crowd he was unable to make it live, and they went ballistic.
Oh, yeah.
I have never been booed in my life. They were booing me. I swear if they had vegetables, they would have thrown it at me. And then we bring Alex in from the back room with a spotlight on him, and they went wild.
Well, that's good dramatics. I like that. That's very good dramatics.
Let's go to Susan in Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Susan, you're on with Jerry Corsi. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing it, but you guys are my heroes.
Ah, thanks.
What I wanted to know was, when McCabe said that if he were fired, he was going to torch the FBI, exactly what that meant. And do you think the Inspector General report will blow everything out of the water?
I didn't hear the last part, Susan. Go ahead one more time.
Sorry. And do you think the Inspector General's report is going to blow everything out of the water?
All right. Go ahead, Jerry.
First of all, McCabe did say that he was, you know, basically, you know, had enough information to turn the FBI upside down, and I think he does because he was in a very central position, and I believe at the center of what I call, you know, killing the deep state makes the argument, pretty startling argument, a lot of evidence for that there was a coup d'etat effort within the FBI that was aimed at removing Donald Trump for president, I think still ongoing, by the way. And I think McCabe does have a lot of information, which will come out, because McCabe is going to be the subject of a criminal investigation very shortly. And secondly, the Inspector General's report, this is Michael Horowitz, who was appointed, by the way, by President Obama. I think his report is going to be fairly devastating on the FBI. What's been already released from that report was the information about Peter Strozek and Lisa Page, these two lovers who exchanged these 10,000 messages, which indicated they wanted an insurance policy to remove Donald Trump from office in case he happened to win. I think there's much more evidence like that the Inspector General has, and when it's public, I think it's going to be really pretty shocking. But it will reaffirm the shocks you're going to get when you read Killing the Deep State.
Okay, next up, let's go to John in Wyoming. Take it away, John.
Thank you very much, George.
Sure.
Another
thing.
Great show with my favorite guest. I appreciate it very much.
You're very well.
I'd like to go back years now to show that this is not just the beginning of corruption with the FBI. FBI corruption goes back a long time. Go back over 50 years when J. Edgar Hoover, who was FBI director, made a nationwide speech one evening declaring that there is no such thing as the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra. And I'm sure the Mafia is still laughing about that one over 50 years later. Then fast forward to 1984, when I was living in Houston, I went to the FBI office to find out. I had heard about the Freedom of Information Act, and I wanted to find out. I got all dressed up in a suit and tie and went down there to find out if they had any kind of files on me. And they sent a young agent out into the foyer, and he had a flat sap in his right hand, and he kept slapping the palm of his left hand just like this every few seconds while I was talking to the man, trying to get some honest answers out of him, which I never got. And then, you know, I still don't know why he did that or why they allowed him to do it. And then the day after the 2012 presidential election, living up here in Wyoming, a well-known crony of a well-known local politician sent me a death threat through the mail, which made it, of course, FBI jurisdiction. So I called the FBI office that same day in Cheyenne, and the very nice lady who was the secretary said the two agents were out, but she would give them the message and have them call me back. Well, they didn't call me back, so 24 hours later, I called back, and she said, "What? They'd never called you back?" I said, "No, ma'am." Well, here we are years later, and they still haven't called me. So it seems that the FBI only goes after those whom they don't like politically, but as far as going after the deep state actors and some of their other cronies, their crooked cronies, they seem to be immune from that.
What do you think, Jerry?
Well, this is one of the major problems with the weaponized and politicized bureaucracy. I would say it's not only the FBI, it's the Department of Justice, it's the IRS. They all have their political bias these days. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, you know, was constantly at the racetracks, provided with the money, the betting, and everything by the mobsters. I mean, it was a joke that he said there was no organized crime in the United States. And we found that this politicalization extends all the way to today. You know, what we now know, Lois Lerner and the IRS had denied conservatives applying for 501(c)(3) and 501, you know, the tax-deferred exemptions for their organizations. She made it difficult, if not impossible, for conservatives and other groups to get those tax exemptions. 501(c)(3) and 501(c)(4) is what I was trying to think of. And so this politicalization, I think, is at the core sickness, this pervasive disease that we have in the bureaucracy that's largely a shadow government and out of control, and I put the CIA at the head of it.
We're going to the country of Panama now. Rick's with us, first-time caller. Rick, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hey, good morning to you all, and glad to hear Jerry coming through good and strong down here by our old canal zone.
Oh,
and,
yeah. We once had it.
yeah, we did. We did have it. And, well, that president of theirs, can't remember his name right off.
Noriega?
Right before Noriega, the one Noriega had killed that time. They sabotaged his airplane, Torrijos, or Torrijos, they call him.
That may have been a Kennedy administration hit.
That was in 1983 or 4 or something like that.
Well, then it wasn't that. Okay.
Yeah, but last time I tried to get through on the show, I was in the country of France, and them jokers at the election were asking me if Miss Clinton won the election.
What are you doing in Panama now?
Oh, shoot, in Panama?
Yeah.
Down here, trying to do some freelancing stuff, and I got hooked up with an old colonel down here that was in the Army at the time, and he was a commander that got sent down to make plans for the country, and he was also here as a commander directing the sectors of the capital city, Panama City, and of this end of the canal zone, too, during the war to take out Noriega. Well, to take out whatever had to be taken out, say the least on that. Yeah, I wasn't here at the time. I was in the Army for a couple of years at the time, but I didn't get sent to Panama. At that time, in 89, December, I was in Asia in Okinawa at the time, between Okinawa and Korea at the time. Yeah, so.
Okay, anyway, how about a quick question for Jerry?
Yeah, the question was that I was sure concerned about that, maybe that deep state was involved in the Alabama election and maybe caused problems for Judge Roy Moore down there. That's one thing I was curious about.
Well, first of all, it's good to hear your voice. Rick is I've known Rick for years.
Oh, you know him. Okay.
Yes, he's a contractor. He distinguished himself. He was a truck driver in Afghanistan and the Middle East when our military was at its height over there. He's all over the world. He calls me from different places from time to time, but he's a military contractor, and he's been in some very dangerous and difficult situations, serving the U.S. government as a contractor driving trucks. And he was trying to think of Omar Torrijos, who was one of the rulers in Panama through 1981. I think that's who he was trying to think of.
Wasn't there a South American during the Kennedy administration who got bumped off?
There was, but I think that may have been
almost the same last name.
Torrijo or
yeah, I'd have it's to pretty
look
close.
That up a little bit. Yes, very close. But anyway, he's asking about the election of Roy Moore. I think it, in a sense, was a deep state operation because, again, you had these women coming forward who were accusing him of infidelity with his wife and actually very early affairs with young women, maybe even before he got married. That type of a hit is typically a staged or deep state hit. At least that's, initially you're thinking. You know who pays these women to come forward, and typically you can find that there's an economic motive for them coming forward, et cetera.
Though it could be true.
There's always the possibility, and you have these things, that's why these attacks can be effective. Not always are they effective. I don't think they'll be effective against Donald Trump. But on the issue of whether they're deep state, typically there is some political motive and money behind these women when they come forward.
Well, I agree, but I mean, with the Trump thing, the Trump's lawyer, Jerry, you give somebody $130,000?
Well,
geez.
I'm sure that there's, more to that than...
There was something there.
Sure, but my point on that was I don't think anybody's going to really care. I think unless a crime were committed, I don't think any...
It's tabloid television right now.
Exactly, and it didn't affect Donald Trump during the campaign. It did not affect Bill Clinton.
No, the only one it really got was Gary Hart. Remember that?
Well, Gary Hart, again, yes, with his monkey business escapade over on Bimini. He was very reckless. I mean, these attacks can be very damaging. It depends on the politician and how they've represented themselves. Roy Moore was vulnerable because he had presented himself as this evangelical Christian.
Yep, it backfired on him.
And Donald Trump, I believe, has never presented himself as being a saint.
He's not a Boy Scout.
He's been around the block.
Yeah, he sure has. He sure has. I've got some sources, Jerry, that have told me some things. He's not a Boy Scout, but
no.
at the same time, what he has done is not.
The argument that was made to evangelical Christians during the election was, back to Cyrus the Great, who was no Boy Scout either, and yet, gave freed the Jewish people from the Babylonian captivity and gave them the wherewithal to build the second temple.
He could still be a good leader.
And the argument was, would you have voted for Cyrus the Great?
Interesting. Jerry, thanks again for being on the program, and thank you for being part of our news excerpts when we do our news of the day as well. Dr. Jerome Corsi, Killing the Deep State, already a bestseller. We're going to come back in a moment and talk about UFOs, disclosure, and the unusual next on Coast to Coast AM.